This is the Sexual Inclusion Network. With your host, Christiane Bella. Sin is in.
Woo woo! Hello, everyone. Welcome to Sexual Inclusion Network. I am Christiane Bella. And today we have a special guest, Sam Beach. We are going to talk to the Witch of the Woods about how flames and the tarot play into our relationships. So let's get Sam on the line. Here we go. Hello.
Hello again.
Yay. So this is take two for us because we tried this yesterday.
I know.
Which, it, as divine alignment always does, has potentially led me to this like super baller radio show opportunity. So I'm actually I'm grateful. Thank you.
Oh, hey, it's my pleasure. Anytime.
This is like the witch magic right here. I mean, this is like full on, like, you know, I'm like, oh, I have a witch on my show and here we go. Everything just like poof.
Right? And let's get the ball rolling there.
Absolutely. So you and I got to meet. We're going to kind of do this again.
That's okay.
5 years ago, when I first moved out here, a mutual friend of ours was like, oh my God, this woman reads tarot and, you know, she's the best. And I have to admit, like, I was kind of snobby because I read cards and, you know, it's just like, oh, whatever, you know. But I was so blown away at just how on point you were. And you're still probably like one of my like top all-time favorite people to go and like get a reading from.
Thank you.
You're tapped into that source energy. It's amazing. So tell me, how did that start for you? Did it start with cards or where did you find yourself in this magic?
I only started down a path of alternative spirituality probably around the time I was 20 or so. And, you know, a couple years into it, when it became more witchcraft-centric, I just wanted to learn a divination tool. And I gravitated toward runes initially, and I was trying to study them, and it just was not clicking for me. And so I thought, well, maybe I'll try tarot, because at least there's pictures on it, you know, not just a bunch of marks on stone. Which, you know, like I said, there's tons of people who can do that brilliantly, but I am not one of them.
We all have to know your superpowers.
Yeah, exactly. So that was kind of how I wound up gravitating toward tarot. And, you know, I read books on it. I was going to workshops. I was, you know, kind of doing like the exercises that they recommend to like get to know your deck and stuff like that. And honestly, I kind of struggled for a little while also because at that point in my journey, I was, you know, prone to what so many of us are prone to of, you know, just not trusting your intuition either. And honestly, the best piece of advice I got, which I still use to this day and tell everyone, is just tell a story. And that kind of changed everything for me.
Wow, I love that, because that's really at its essence what we are. We're kind of like interpreters of these universal stories, and it's kind of like a matter of sort of like pulling it out of the air and giving it life and kind of giving it form and reflecting it, because we are so much just like reflections of each other, and so we have these stories that are woven into all of our lives.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for anyone who's, I guess, not familiar with the tarot, there are, it's kind of split into two sections. There's like the major arcana and then the minor. And that major arcana with like those main players are archetypes. And archetypes speak to things that are within all of us. They're part of the collective. That's where those energies come from. So, yeah, exactly what you're saying. It's just the stories in all of us, and depending on where they come up and how they relate to each other, you're just telling that person's individual story.
I love that. My grandfather, I never got to meet him. He passed away before I was born, but as I've been told, he used to read playing cards and stopped because the things that he was seeing was stuff that he was judging as bad. What are your thoughts on that? Do you believe like there is good or bad, or it just is the story?
I mean, I guess it's all relative, isn't it? You know, I mean, when you're looking at someone's stuff, I mean, like, I have run into people, even close friends, who are like, no, I don't want a reading because, and they always say the same thing, I don't want to know when I'm going to die. And it's like, that's not really how it works, but I can appreciate that you would that you are more comfortable with the unknown than perhaps like a likelihood of this is where you're heading and maybe you don't think that's favorable.
Right.
But it's all in how you apply context, you know? Because if I read for someone and say, like, okay, well, I see, you know, if you keep going down this path, you know, you're going to wind up having a major illness. Well, yeah, that can be very stressful. And depending on how you decide to interact with that information and that energy, you know, maybe you're going to be proactive and, you know, change your diet or change your lifestyle or something like that to, you know, circumvent that. Or if you kind of get caught up in like the stress of it or the anxiety of it and don't have the tools to kind of combat that, well, then you may get sucked further down that road. Because that's the thing, is that nothing is written in stone. Any psychic or intuitive will tell you that. Nothing is written in stone. People who sit on the other side of the table want to think like your word is gospel, and that's an awful lot of responsibility to put on anybody. But I think any reader worth their salt will say, you know, you could walk out of this room right now and, you know, just decide that what I said is wrong and change your whole path.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely up to the receiver. I mean, I think of any information, you know, it's our lens that filters, you know, what we're interpreting, what we're going to take that information and then where we're going to go with it. So yeah, it's such an interesting thing. Like, cause I was very turned off to my intuition, because I was getting these visions of things that at the moment I was like, oh man, I don't want to know that, you know, cause I felt like that's fucked up. Like, but I realize now, like, there really isn't, at least for me, my perspective is like, there isn't anything inherently bad or fucked up. It's just like, this is the unfolding, and the unfolding could go a lot of ways. You know, it's really that butterfly effect. Like, one little pebble gets moved and you swoosh, you know, a whole nother dimension thing unfolds, and then an entirely different outlook is before you. So it just really is like, this is just kind of a glimpse. I feel like, you know, you're getting like, all right, here's one picture. Here's one way, you know, the movie could end. But it can keep editing that movie, and it can totally change. So
it's not the choose your own adventure.
Absolutely. Oh my God, that's such a great way of looking at it. Yes, I love that. So you've chosen a lot of adventures in your life, because when I met you, you were studying to be like a respiratory nurse. I don't know whatever ended up happening with that. Some of the other times I've crossed paths with you have been these really amazing moments, because you're a burlesque dancer as well.
I am.
And so tell us a little bit about that, because you actually have an act that overlaps and kind of marries together the tarot and the burlesque.
I do. So I came to burlesque, I guess, in about 2016, and it was kind of part of a rediscovering and embracing my body kind of journey, because like, unfortunately, so many of us are wont to do, we just hate our bodies. And that was me for 30 years. And then it was a very aligned path that took me to burlesque and took me to the studio that was in Nashville at the time called Delinquent and Debutante. And yeah, so the first act that I did there, or that I did ever, was, I didn't even realize it at the time, which is what I think is funny looking back on it, but it's the High Priestess from the tarot deck, or in the deck, in the deck that I use, it's a fairy tale deck. It's called the Sorceress. And that's what I did, you know? And it's like, oh, wow. So that was more fitting than I even realized, you know?
I love that. And yeah, I was so happy for a brief time. One of my many career paths was producing burlesque shows, and to get you to see you do that on stage was just phenomenal. It was one of my favorite acts. So,
oh, well, thank you. It was fun. Had a lot of fun doing it for you guys.
I loved it. It was so much fun. It was so unique. And it had this like cool, like gypsy vibe. And then, yeah, you did this like whole tarot, and it fit with our theme, which was the letter F for that night, which was kind of like tied into the fortune teller, which I love. But so you mentioned the High Priestess as being one of the archetypes. How do you see the differences and, or I guess overlaps of the idea of the witch or the archetype of the witch and that of the High Priestess?
Well, I guess this is maybe more personal opinion than anything, but I feel like the witch taps into maybe a more primal energy. When you talk about the witch or you talk about the High Priestess, you are speaking to these energies that are both typically associated with the divine feminine. Obviously, you know, I'm not here to say that men aren't witches, but I'm just saying, like, typically, that's right. The connotation most people have when you think of a witch. But you're talking about this kind of divine feminine energy in both spaces. These very transgress. These figures that guard the veil. They are between the worlds. They exist between the worlds, you know, and they traverse with ease the waking world that we know, and then the intuitive subconscious world that most of us don't feel tapped into regularly. Where I think they differ is that the High Priestess tends to be thought more of as, I want to kind of say, like, put on a pedestal, and I don't mean that in any negative way, kind of like elevated, almost like this kind of regal feeling, like above primal physical nature or carnal nature, even. And I think the witch definitely taps more into that. You know, the witch is a very transgressive figure. The witch is the one who lives in that liminality, like literally on the edge of the woods or something. I mean, that's a very good physical visualization of what she represents. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think it took me a long time to embrace the word witch because I was just taught that it was such like a bad, dirty thing versus like the High Priestess was almost like aside the queen, you know, like it was like that sort of royal presence of like spirit and yeah, definitely kind of in a different level, whereas like the witch was like the outcast and on the outskirts of society and on the that fringe. So yeah, definitely. I love the way you broke that down. So did you find that was similar for you? Like, did you have any challenges embracing the idea of like referring to yourself as a witch, having grown up with, you know, wicked witch ideas?
I didn't struggle with embracing the term witch as much because of those messages as much as, for a while, I just kind of didn't believe in my own magic. And this is going to sound super goofy, but sometimes I'm like, oh, I shouldn't call myself a witch. I fucking hate bugs. You know, you're supposed to be all embracing of nature. I'm like, ugh, I just want nothing to do with it. But honestly, like what really helped me step into that was finally feeling like I found a spirit, like a not spiritual path, but just a magical path that I resonated with. And that's partially the type of magic that I do combined with the inner work to back it up, which for me is kind of a variety of shadow work techniques. And this is what I've done for a few years, and that's really helped me embrace that.
Oh, let's definitely dive in more to that. So tell me about your shadow work techniques, because I am definitely a fan of shadow work. It is my wheelhouse.
Me too. I honestly, boy, I could soapbox about shadow work. I know we have a finite amount of time, though, ma'am. But I was introduced to shadow work through a series of online articles I found. The biggest one that kind of led me into it was this technique by someone named Carolyn Elliott, and she's coined this technique, this term, and it's in a book now called Existential Kink, which I think you of all people would actually really appreciate.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with it?
No, but I am going to definitely look that up when we're done.
Yeah. Existential kink. And essentially the premise is that if you think about what kink is in a quote unquote mundane way, like on this earthly plane, BDSM, it is people consenting in a container to experience pain as pleasure, you know, like flagellation or spanking or the pouring of hot wax or, you know, pick your poison. And so that's kind of translated into, well, what if we did the same thing with the shitty stuff we perceive in our lives, like not enough money or emotionally unavailable men I keep dating, or, why can't I lose weight or whatever the case may be. And so it's proposing that there is a part of you spiritually, mentally, emotionally, that is gaining some pleasure from those experiences, and that is why they are sticking around. But it's up to us on a conscious level to find it and consent to it and to experience those pains as pleasure. And that is how you kind of integrate this part of you that's been suppressed and unify your will.
Oh, that is so good. I love it. So what, I guess, do you see that there, you know, like within shadow work, would you say, is there need to be, what would someone would call like maybe black magic or dark magic, or do you say like there's a difference between like shadow work and what someone would consider like black magic?
I would say that there is a delineation, but depending on what your magical path is, there might not be. And I say that because I'm familiar with some deities or spirits that, you know, people can call upon that can certainly facilitate that process. But if you're not abundantly clear in how you're doing it, it may be a bit of rough going. So to do it just with techniques can be perhaps a slightly smoother process than if you're calling upon things. And I'm not saying don't do that. It's just not been my experience to do it, because I already knew of people who would call in certain beings to try to help them, and it kind of presents like a smack in the face or a frying pan to the back of the head. So, you know, if you can navigate it more clearly or succinctly, then by all means do it. But I don't know that I would say that that's black magic.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I personally, I think everything has a purpose. And so obviously your intention behind it, you know, if you're going to dive in and do shadow work, you might want, you know, depending on how deep you're going or what you're getting into, you may want allies, like, you know, like, for example, like a Kali or somebody who's like, you know, the goddess of death, to like go with you, your sidekick in that. And then coming through that, you know, if you're not really super clear, you might, like you said, get a good, like, big dose of like, all right, here we go. Oh, you wanted like that gone? Well, it's going to be gone in like the craziest, you know, abrupt way. And so, yeah, you know, I think that's where if somebody intended to, you know, do something with malicious intent to move something, you know, I guess that could be construed as whether or not you would say it's like black magic. But I still think everything has a purpose. And so I don't know that anything is necessarily, again, like good or bad. It's just like, you know, how you're yielding it. And like any sword, like, you know, that sword, it'll slice and it could be a nice, good cut that needs to happen. It could be a cut that needs to happen and it just, you know, it stings a little more and it got a little sloppier. But
absolutely,
they all have their purpose in there one way or another. So let's jump in to this idea of twin flames, which seems so perfect because we're in the midst of Gemini right now. How does twin flames show up for you? How would you, you know, explain that? Because I feel like it's something that's thrown around a lot, especially in like the new agey world. You know, everyone obviously has like their own viewpoint, but I would love to hear your take on how that is shown up in your life and what sparked twin flames for you.
Well, the reason I only ever even became aware of the term twin flame was because years ago I got a reading from someone who I trusted and had been correct about stuff in the past, and out of nowhere she goes, you're gonna meet your twin flame. I'm like, I don't even know what that is, and right. Not to mention, like, I'm married, so what are you talking about? And so I got into, like, I looked into it, and what I understood initially, it was like, okay, well, this sounds kind of like a leveled up soulmate, if you will, but I just kind of brushed it off. And then lo and behold, a few months later, I met the person that I thought she was talking about, and I was floored. And it really freaked me out at first, to be perfectly honest, because ultimately what I came to understand about twin flames, because ultimately I did engage in a relationship with this person for several years, and in the interim, did an awful lot of reading, an awful lot of research, met up with other people who were in similar situations and relationships, and, you know, and there is a lot of information on there, and obviously there's no, like, real, physical, tangible way to prove any of it, but, you know, I can speak from my experience, and ultimately it's, you know, like I said, so I engaged in a relationship with this man for several years, and what I came to learn about it was that it's people who haven't experienced it yet think that they want it. Like, they want to find their twin flame, like people talk about finding your soulmates, like this ultimate, you know, romantic union and love and balance, you know, and like this perfect yin and yang, that kind of thing. And I do believe that that is what a soulmate is. I believe that that is part of what a twin flame is, but a twin flame brings with it a whole slew of other junk that is not for the faint of heart. And when I say that, what I'm speaking to is basically this person is coming into your life because it's posited that this is your divine other. It's not that you are not a whole soul unto yourself. Like, you don't need another soul to be complete. But if you go on the premise that, you know, you have an oversoul, like you're both kind of from the same oversoul that was like split in two. There's a little flame in each of you. That's hence the twin flame. But you show up in each other's lives at that time when you're both ready and aligned to trigger the ever-loving shit out of each other.
That's putting it nice.
Yeah. You you are put into each other's lives to experience this absolute soul-shaking depth of love that you've probably never experienced before and maybe never thought you could. And things just click into place and they feel so perfect and so divinely aligned. But at the same time, they are going to present a mirror to you. They reflect back to you all of the stuff that you need to work on. And that is a very mild way of putting it. And so these relationships tend to be more about your personal growth than ultimately coming together. And that's not to say that people don't come together or that that can't be the ultimate outcome, but it's not necessarily the ultimate outcome, which is very difficult for people in these situations to hear, because I was also there at one point and did not want to hear that.
Right. I think that's kind of like the catch of it, is you probably wouldn't stick around to do the growth that you need to if you didn't love this person so deeply. But the likelihood is, once you're done doing the work, you're supposed to, you know, move that, you know, light, flame, whatever, and go in your respective directions. But because you have this deep, and now that even more so, because you've done all this like gut-wrenching work, you feel like super bonded and you think like, oh my God, how can I like live without you? But that's usually like, it's really one of those kind of like relationships that has an expiration date. It's like, all right, you're supposed to come here, you know, here's the contract. And upon completion of said work, like, you know, it's done. That's it. And my experience with that has been like, it's like ripping things apart.
Yeah.
You know, that I can't imagine would have gone any other way, but the untangling of that, you know, is definitely a rough one. So do you don't think then it like, cause you said you were married at the time, so it's not necessarily even a romantic thing as much as just like this deep pulling together of spirit contract energy?
Well, I think it certainly can be that for a lot of people. And and I appreciate you giving me the benefit of the doubt. But as it happened, my marriage was already in the process of ending at that time.
Okay.
And so that was not an obstacle per se. Mm-hmm. However, this man was married. And that's a very taboo thing to say to people who are listening, and will probably change their opinion of me, but it is what it is. And it was not my finest moment, but you know, that was what happened. And the people who I conversed with and who found themselves in just similar situations, in so much as, you know, they thought they had found this twin flame, and there were always complicating circumstances around every one of them. And I'm not saying that to like excuse anything, but I do think that that's the nature of that particular type of connection. Mm-hmm. It is purposely difficult, and you're purposely faced with things that you have to try to navigate that are going to try to make you grow. So it absolutely can be that, you know, kind of like soul deep pull. But more often than not, I found that people, it tended to be more of a romantic nature.
Yeah. And I mean, I personally being, you know, a sex educator, I think like, I mean, there's so many things around like these ideas of monogamy that I think are like very judgmental of people. And, you know, I think that especially when you're talking about like this twin flame stuff, but I think in general, like we meet people and there are things that just need to run their course. And if we let these sort of like arbitrary agreements that we make here on like the earth plane that are mostly to help society be comfortable. And I feel like marriage is one of those things where it's like, oh, we said we wouldn't do anything with anyone else till one of us dies. A lot of work that needs to get done. And somehow, I mean, some people just will see like the deeper importance. And I feel like that was, you know, your case is like, no, like things need to happen and we just need to do what we need to do. And, you know, and everything does play out as it's supposed to. But yeah, that is one of those tricky things that, you know, I mean, because I've been on all sides, but I've been like the other woman, so to speak. I've been the mm-hmm. woman who knew, oh, there is another woman. And so, you know, looking back on all those moments, like I could see every single one of them, like there was a bigger thing at play. And, you know, it's hard to see maybe in that moment. But once
yeah.
you step back and enough time goes by, you're like, ah, see, like this is exactly what we needed to happen. So your twin flame, obviously you are not in contact anymore. Or like, do you still have connection with this person?
No, not at this point. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I will not be surprised if I don't anymore, which I mm-hmm. could not have said for the several years that we were together, because it was very on again, off again, because,
right.
again, unfortunately, the nature of these things seems to be a little bit volatile. And I don't mean that in mm-hmm. like a physically violent way or anything, but just intense.
Yeah.
And so during those on again, off again periods, like there was still always the love and the fondness and the sentiment and, mm-hmm. and all of that stuff. And then, actually more often than not, he would be the one to reach out to me, mm-hmm. and kind of rekindle that connection. And there was just something very different about this last time that we parted ways that just felt final. So, and I will say that at this point, I had to reach out to him once, but it was about something very practical, and it was very mundane, and it was very, very much like just business, which was so different than anything in the past. So there is a sense of finality about this, and
mm-hmm.
that might change, it might not, and I've definitely made peace with, if it is, that's fine, you know, like we did whatever we needed to do together, and
mm-hmm.
now it's our job to do our own work on our own path.
Right. Have you ever seen, I think it was called The Butcher's Wife with Demi Moore. It was like, I think it was like a 90s movie. She has this theory about split apart. That's like this concept she has, and she plays this person who's like clairvoyant, and she's on this quest to find her split apart. And it always felt like a very twin flamey kind of concept. And then throughout the movie is pretty hilarious, because like who she thinks she's supposed to love is, you know, and like all these things unfold that cause these eruptions and like create all these like side romance and affairs. And so every time I've watched that movie, I'm like, this is kind of like twin flames in motion. Like it's like all of these like things playing out for people to learn these lessons, and then there's like
mm-hmm.
romance, and heartbreak.
You know, I haven't, but I'll definitely look into it. Two kind of twin flamey movies that jump to mind.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of like romantic dramas, but The Notebook is one. Like people
oh, okay.
who kept coming back together over and over
uh-huh.
and over, not in great circumstances, kept apart by all manner of weird happenstances,
mm-hmm.
and had to grow in the meantime. And then the other one is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Wow, I love that movie.
Yeah, and I mean, talk about two people who obviously had some baggage that they needed to work out, but clearly...
Right.
had this intense love between them,
mm-hmm.
and unfortunately, you know, couldn't make it work in the end, or maybe they didn't make it work in the end, you know, depending
right.
on how you interpret that. But
yeah.
That's very twin flamey to me.
Yeah. I've never watched The Notebook, just because it just struck me as like such a sappy like teen romance, but now that you brought up this angle of it, I'm open to now like going and giving it a try. I just felt like it was one of those movies that was like so hyped up that everyone's just like, oh my God, it made me cry.
No, like, I honestly couldn't agree more. And the only reason I watched it, because I don't dig sappy movies either, is because I worked at Blockbuster at the time. That's how long ago this was. And we got to watch everything before it came out.
Yeah. I love that Blockbuster, man. Whew, that's like... For those of you tuning in who are not aware, there used to be this thing called video stores. And Blockbuster was a big one where you would go and rent VHS and DVD.
Right. Might as well tell someone I saved something on a floppy disk.
I love it. So for those of you who are tuning in via Facebook or listening to us on Blog Talk Radio, you can join this conversation. If you have questions, stories you want to share, ideas you'd like to exchange with us, you can give us a call. This is an old school style talk radio show. We're on the topic of vintage things. And you can call us here at 319-527-6205. And jump in if you have questions for the Witch of the Woods or myself, or just some fun story you might want to share about your twin flame experiences. So do you read for, do people come to you and they're like, oh, I want a reading. I want to like know, you know, can you tell me like where I'm going to find my Prince Charming type deal? Or do you get a lot of requests for that? Like people wanting like these like insights into their romance or their sex lives?
I do, but not necessarily. I don't really have that many people who will ask me where, thankfully, because that is not within my purview. But occasionally I'll get when. And I can get kind of like a ballpark estimate, like a range, kind of like what the cable company would give you, like between 8 and 12 will be there.
Yeah. Okay. And have you yourself, like, do you read for yourself and notice things about relationships? Like before you start dating someone, do you like kind of read to find out more about them?
I do, for sure. And I've used tarot to try to gain greater insight into kind of like the underlying dynamics of, usually it's a relationship I'm already in. Because honestly, I didn't read back when I was dating more.
Okay.
So I've used it within the context of the relationships that I've been in. So whenever there's been like maybe like power dynamics or like struggles or anything like that, you can utilize it to kind of see like, well, what are the underlying currents that are keeping us maybe locked in place in this conflict? And you can kind of see things like, you know, well, what's the biggest block for them? What's the biggest block for you? What would be the best way to dissolve both of those? Is there a way that you can dissolve both of those that will make both of you happy? Recently I even, recently in reading on a new potential person, I was asking like, what would potentially keep me from engaging in a deeper connection with this person. And it kind of called me out and it was like, you need to keep doing your shadow work, bitch. Like,
oh, wow.
Don't be lazy. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Is that, I feel like that's such a tricky part when I read for myself. Like, I feel like I often just tell myself the thing I want to hear. And so that's why I try to go to other people and get readings, because I feel like my readings are like skewed when I do them for myself. I'm like, yeah, all the rainbows and sunshine. So,
yeah,
but that's good. You get a clear, like, nah, like you're like really upfront with yourself.
Well, no, I mean, to be totally fair, you know, I can get kind of whipped into that frenzy as well if I'm if I'm fixated on a topic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll realize it because I'll have no chill and I'll be making myself nuts about it. And if I've gotten to that point, then yeah, I need to stop reading on it and go to someone else. But if I've been able to ask a question and in that moment where you turn the card over and you get that first pang, if it's that like gut punch, that's like, oh, hey, universe is calling you out right here, right now. It's like, oh,
yeah,
that's for me. Sorry. I'm so embarrassed.
I love that. I love that feeling. I actually get like such a rush from it when I'm like reading and doing things like that, like, yeah, that like gut punch. Yeah, that's a good way of describing it. Like, yeah, there's this like, I don't know. I sometimes like will shiver. I'll get this like chilly, like, I don't know, like twitch. Like, I'm like, oh yeah, that's it. That's the like electricity of it. Yeah, then I know I'm in the zone. I'm like, I'm not just like playing. So just, or I mean, I feel like it is all, I guess, playful, but it's just, yeah, that like deeper connection to it. So do you have like a ritual or a practice that you do like before or after you read to kind of clear your channel and kind of open up and tap in?
I would love to say that I do, but I don't. my friend and I, my other witchy friend and I, we call it Dixie cup magic, like random, simple, borderline chaotic. Which people would look down their noses at and be like, what in the motherfucker are you doing? But it works for us. So, I mean, the closest I could say I do to a ritual before starting to read is just kind of trying to, like, you know, deep breath, calming myself down, settling into my body, and trying to consciously connect to like my higher self and the other things that I would call on that would help open up that channel. And honestly, that's kind of it. And like I say a little prayer that goes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of it. And I don't do anything when I finish. Gosh, no, that's about it.
Yeah. No, and I mean, I think that's so important. Like, it doesn't have to be complicated. I feel like so many people stop themselves from doing stuff that they have, like the voice, the intuition, that like calling, and they don't because they think there needs to be some whole big like pomp and circumstance and you know, ordeal that happens. And it's like, no, you just like roll with it.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, because we talked a little bit earlier about the burlesque and like being in your body and being more comfortable in your body. Do you feel like having gone through that and gotten a deeper sense of connection to your body, have your readings and has your witchy magic kind of leveled up, do you think, as a result of having gone that journey?
I would say for me, yes, it has. And quite interestingly, as a side note, the burlesque community and the witchy community have a huge overlapping section in a Venn diagram, at least in Nashville. I mean, the store that I read at for a long time before the pandemic, I can't tell you how many burlesque performers I knew who I've run into in there. And it always just tickled me. But yeah, I would say it has, because part of tapping into your intuition, and I mean, obviously that's going to look different for everybody, and everyone's going to have, you know, different things that are stronger for them if they're starting to really tune in and trust what they're getting, you know, just like there's clairvoyance and there's clairaudience and clairsentience. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even saying that's like full blown clair anything, but one of the things that you can more often than not rely on is your body to tell you things, because really truly, just as beings in physical bodies, our bodies know things before we consciously do. Our bodies are picking up on impressions and vibrations and all of these things before we consciously are aware of them. So if you have that connection with your body and can be present with it and settle into it, you'll get more information. And prior to doing burlesque, I was very disconnected. And once I kind of started down that path, I definitely was way more connected to my body. And it's funny you mention it, because I'm kind of, much to my shock, in the same loop again, because my body has changed an awful lot recently. And I'm like, I don't think I did this shit. What the hell? But it's going to be this process of tuning into my body again. I wouldn't say that has deterred my magic or my spirituality necessarily at this point in time, but I can say that, yes, I do feel like it helped throughout that journey the last several years.
I love it. So we have a caller. I'm going to bring our caller on. Here we go. Hello, caller. You are live on Sexual Inclusion Network. If you'd like to share your name, you're welcome to. Otherwise, you can stay anonymous.
Hey, so I was listening to you guys, and I actually have been researching a lot about twin flames recently. I was told during a reading that I am currently in a situation with my twin flame, and I literally just today was talking about it with my mom and used the notebook as an analogy of like how I feel. So it's just so weird and funny and cool that that was just brought up when I clicked on the conversation. And I'm in this weird separation stage with my twin flame, and everything turns into an argument, and it's just really bizarre, and I'm learning more about this. So I didn't know if there's any insight you could share with me in what this looks like.
So when you say you're in separation, but everything is an argument, are you still in contact with this person?
Not at the moment. We were in contact. There was a separation both physically and emotionally. I was out of town, and now that I'm back, there's been just some drama and everything turns really dramatic. So now we just kind of aren't in contact, and it's probably for the best.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. So I've definitely been in that position a number of times, and I, my sympathies are with you, because I know it is not easy.
Yeah.
And that's an understatement. But what I found to be the most helpful during those times was, you know, allow yourself, you know, that time to grieve. And I mean, and I don't say that meaning that it's final, but
yeah,
obviously, you know, emotions come up around a separation with someone who is very dear to you. So allow yourself to move through those emotions and process those emotions. Don't stifle them, but don't dwell there either. And
right,
once you've kind of given yourself that space, and I know it sounds so trite and it makes people crazy, but really the best thing you can do is anything and everything that makes you happy and that you feel contributes to your growth.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's what I'm trying to do. It's hard. It's like an everyday conscious choice.
No, I know. And like I said, I know that is so much easier said than done. And as someone who's been in that spot before, it is like a moment by moment choice. And it's a hard choice to make too. But it, and again, unfortunately, I know this is so super trite too, but it really is one of these, this too shall pass. And
yeah,
totally. If this is kind of a new adventure, then that might feel less realistic. And I totally get that completely.
Yeah. And I guess the hardest thing right now in this moment of like turning this chapter into the next for myself is finding that balance of having hope and keeping that love in my heart for this person and hope that things are going to work out and we will come back together because it's what's meant to happen. But then also not putting my life on hold and having false expectations, you know, that it's only going to disappoint me. So that's just the very fine line I'm trying to figure out how to walk right now.
That is the perfect thing to do. And again, I completely empathize because I know that that is a just kind of a blurry line. Even, you know, And what I will say is, because it sounds like you're pretty well versed in, you know, understanding, like, I know this is time for me to kind of like work stuff out and, you know, kind of where that balance falls, you know, between hope and detachment from an outcome, as it were.
Right.
What I will say is that, bear in mind, if you go on the premise that a twin flame is in fact another portion of your soul, anything you do for yourself will be mirrored in this person. So
right.
If you are healing yourself, you're healing this person. If you are disengaging from old unhelpful patterns, you're helping that person do that too, or at least guide them to how they can do it for themselves. So hopefully that would be encouragement. And
I've never heard it said like that before, but that's like really cool. And I guess I get my own head and my own anxiety and paranoia takes over that, well, if I'm not around him, how's he going to know how good I'm doing, if I'm doing good? But you're right. If I really believe that this is what this connection and this relationship is, then like, I have to hope that he's just going to feel that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that's a big leap of faith to make.
I know.
But it's a big old strange leap of faith to even acknowledge in the first place sometimes that, oh, this might be a twin flame thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, and the more I read about it, the more I just feel so validated in my intuition into that when I met this person, I was just like, oh, yep, this is it. This is, I don't know what the path is going to be. I don't think it's going to be easy, but like, it was just that internal pull, and we still have that push and pull, but he's just the runner and I'm the chaser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Been there, my friend, been there. And you said something else that was very good, that you didn't want to put your life on hold for this person.
Mm-hmm.
That is so wonderful that at this point in time, even in separation, that you can even articulate that, you know, and be very clear about that. Because honestly, that was a mistake that I made. And so good for you for having that clarity while still maintaining this kind of delicate dance.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this has been awesome. Thank you so much. Like, I'm really stoked that I went on my Facebook and saw this.
I'm so glad you joined us. Yeah, thank you so much for being here. I would just add one more thing. You know, if you, again, you know, with this idea that we're all connected, especially if you have, like, this super deep connection with someone, like your ripples really do get felt, that you take some time, maybe at the beginning or the end of your day, to just kind of see yourself like feeling safe and loved and kind of in this ball of light, and that you can send that energy to them as well. So you are staying like healthy and protected, and your kind of energetic boundaries stay intact.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you can be connected without feeling this need to go, like you're saying, and chase after them, that like there is love that you're sending to them, but you are also kind of keeping yourself intact. And something that I do now when I'm find myself, you know, connected with somebody and I want to really be mindful of like how I'm managing that to stay taking care of myself is just really kind of asking, just like putting it out there, like, okay, you know, where would you have me go? And like, you know, put me in the room with the people I'm supposed to be in the room with, like put me in contact with the people. And if those are not the people that are showing up, you know, it's like, there's a reason why they're not showing up. Like really just asking the universe to just be like, okay, align me with who I'm supposed to be around, know who I'm supposed to learn from. Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much. This was great.
You're welcome. Thank you for joining us. Have a good night.
Of course. You too. Bye.
Yay. I love callers. It's so much fun.
I know.
It's great. I don't know if you grew up listening to like Dr. Ruth or Dr. Drew or any of those people when you were in the radio days.
Well, it was more Loveline and MTV at that point, but same concept.
Okay. Yeah. So this is like when I realized that you could do this. Yeah, I was like, oh my God, I have to do this. Like,
I love blast from the past.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a few minutes left. I would love for you to share how people can get in touch with you if they want a reading from The Witch of the Woods. What are good ways to reach out to find you? Anything you want to share about how to get up close and personal?
Yeah, certainly. The best way to find me is on Facebook or Instagram. And on Facebook, it's just Witch of the Woods. I know the links are in the body, I think, of the the show. Sorry. But yeah, probably the best way to reach me is going to be on Facebook more than anything. And, you know, could always just message me and we talk about, you know, kind of what you're gunning for if you're wanting a reading and how much time, and you schedule it. And at this point in time, I'm doing them through FaceTime or Messenger. And I can do Zoom too. I just haven't yet. But yeah, lots of options. And the other couple things I do is I also do spiritual counseling, which is kind of a, I guess you could say it's similar to tarot, but it doesn't utilize the cards. It's strictly, you know, kind of, you know, an advisory thing, I guess, if people feel kind of lost or have questions, you know, it's just sort of someone to walk you through things and kind of point you in the right direction. And I've started offering that because I've had a lot of people reach out to me in that capacity. And then the other thing I do, I haven't launched this yet, but the other thing that I'm in the process of doing is like, I call it shadow midwifery. Like if you think of a midwife.
Yeah.
If, you know, someone, I guess you could say it is a form of coaching, if you will, but it is kind of getting down to brass tacks with someone, you know, on a one-on-one basis. Talking about what their goals are, where they feel like they're stuck. And we really go into like the shadow work that can help you get from point A to point B and kind of uncover where you're sabotaging yourself and things like that. And, you know, but it's a very witchy thing, but I say it's shadow midwifery because, you know, if you think of a midwife, you're talking about an uncomfortable, painful experience that someone is there to guide you through, which is a very transitory experience. And that's what shadow work is.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Because you get like birthed on the other side of your shadow work. So that is so perfect. Shadow midwifery. I love it.
Thank you.
So yes, that was a little voice reminding us that we have 90 seconds and counting now. So fantastic. And I'll be sure to put, for those of you who are watching on Facebook Live, I'll be sure to put all the links in there as well. Thank you, magic voice from the sky. So once again, this has been the Sexual Inclusion Network. I am Christiane Bella, and joining us today was Witch of the Woods, Sam Veach. Thank you so much for being here, Sam, and it's been absolutely amazing. I really appreciate you sharing your stories.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Good night, everyone. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you again on Blog Talk Radio. Take care.